What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello from Uruguay. How are you all? You're all having a great week. I'm having an amazing time down here in South America. It's my first time. Met so many great people. It's just a really cool place. Really enjoying Uruguay. Anyway, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken. And today I've got an interview with Bitcoin OG Trace Mayer discussing his Proof of Keys campaign. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So first up, we have BlockFi. Yes, the amazing BlockFi, my longest ever sponsor. They are the future of Bitcoin and financial services. And I've been catching up with the team here in Uruguay, finding out what is happening next year, the new products they're going to be releasing, which are very cool. I really can't wait to tell you about them all. They are definitely the best in the sector. They are building a powerhouse of Bitcoin borrowing and lending. So if you need a loan for your Cybertruck, your flamethrower, a trip to the moon, or if you've got to pay the man, then BlockFi have got you covered. And if you want to earn interest on your Bitcoin, Ether, or GSD, while they've dropped all minimum deposits, they've removed the early withdrawal penalty, and you can receive interest payments in the currency of your choice. I am a customer, and I love getting my interest every month. And if you're interested in finding out more, I do suggest you do your own research. Then head over to blockfi.com, which is BlockFi.com. And next up, we have the mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. And I've been talking about these all year. I've been telling you why they are the best for security, why they've got the best account management service in the business. But they also have this unrivaled suite of trading products. They've got Kraken.com, which is the best place to buy, sell, and trade digital currencies. They've got margin trading with up to 5x leverage. They've got futures. They've got indices. They've got the Kraken OTC desk for large trades with private and personalized services. They've also got CryptoWatch, where you can trade on multiple exchanges from a single platform. And they've just released Kraken Pro, a beautiful mobile-first app where you can trade on Kraken wherever you want. If you want to find out more, head over to Kraken.com or download the app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is K-R-A-K-E-N-P-R-O. Okay, so on to the show today, and we have Trace Mayer back on. Back in October, I had Trace on the show, and we talked about the importance of being self-sovereign and owning your private keys. And now with January just around the corner and the anniversary of Bitcoin's Genesis block, Trace's campaign Proof of Keys is back. Now, this is a really cool campaign that encourages everyone to take their Bitcoin off exchanges or third-party custodians and take control of their Bitcoin. I'm a big supporter of the campaign, and last year when I was doing it, I actually found half a Bitcoin on Cryptopia that I'd completely forgotten about and removed it just a few months before it was hacked and shut down. So the campaign's, you know, saved me quite a bit of money. So I'd really encourage everyone to get behind this, take control of your Bitcoin. And if you do have any questions or feedback on the show, do hit me up. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Just a note, I am out in South America. I'm in Uruguay now. I'm at the BitConf. I'm going to be heading out to Bolivia in a few days. I've got an interview I'm going to be doing for Defiance out there, which is great. And then I'm going to be heading back to the UK to have a break, enjoy Christmas and the new year. So if you have any questions, do hit me up. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.
This is Trace Mayer, and you're listening to the What Bitcoin Did podcast with Peter McCormick. This is a public service announcement about the annual celebration of Proof of Keys. Peter's a big fan of Proof of Keys, and it's where the entire community withdraws all their Bitcoins to addresses where they hold the private keys and run a full node. Because Peter participated in the 2019 Proof of Keys, he secured half a Bitcoin that would have been lost in Cryptopia. So visit Proof of Keys to learn more about why and how you should participate. And please make a small change to your Twitter handle to show your support. Thanks.
Trace, how are you?
Oh, wonderful, Peter. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. This is third time in very short succession and your fourth appearance. I'm going to put you right up there now. Nobody's had a fifth appearance. We've had, I think, three with four appearances on the show. So appreciate your time. We're doing Proof of Keys 2.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And, you know, it's a lot of fun eating a bunch of steak in Wyoming. So I guess if you... Hang out in the same spot, you're able to get a lot of interviews done, right?
Yeah, but Proof of Keys too, man. Proof of Keys, a whole year. I can't believe it's been a whole year. And I mean, you know this, right? And everyone else will know this by the time they hear it. But I actually owe you a thanks from last Proof of Keys. And actually, the timing of it was really, really interesting because I went around all my old exchanges. You know, I only have Bitcoin now, but I went around all my old exchanges, even the ones with the shit coins on them. And on Cryptopia, I found half a Bitcoin. I was that negligent that I found half a Bitcoin on Cryptopia, which I transferred out, and I wouldn't have found that without Proof of Keys. And then what was it like? I think later that was it. February, Cryptopia were hacked and then went into liquidation and then bankruptcy.
Right. So yeah, last year, you know, the Proof of Keys, the intent is not to bankrupt a bunch of exchanges because the exchanges should be fully reserved, right? So like Proof of Keys should be a non-issue to them. If they actually have the Bitcoins. But I did find it very interesting that last year we had Quadriga CX and Cryptopia both fail completely. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars lost with customers. And sounds like you narrowly avoided becoming one of the casualties.
Well, I wouldn't have known I was a casualty either. That's the interesting thing, because I didn't know I had the half a Bitcoin on there. You know, I went around, I must have had like five exchanges that I went around just to check, just to double check that I had nothing on any of them. And like I say, I found it on Cryptopia. But if I hadn't have done that, I wouldn't have even known. So it was almost like a half a Bitcoin bonus, which in future, that might be $500,000.
Yeah, it might be worth a couple bucks later. No, I think that's an excellent point that you raise. It's very easy to kind of lose track of all the stuff, you know, because we just have more important things going on, and Bitcoin's digital. It's not like physical. So it's like kind of harder to keep track of it all. And then like, do you have your passwords? Do you have the right login screens? Do you have the right two-factor authentication codes? Do you have this? Do you have that? Do you, blah, 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 right? And if you do this every year, then you're going through the motions and you're drilling. You're like, you're shooting the free throws, right? You're practicing. And you don't, you know, you're current in your skills. If you like leave stuff, if you just let stuff pile up for 4, 5, 6 years, you're going to have no idea like where the data or the information or the Bitcoins are that you need, right? Because I mean, we have hundreds and hundreds of sites that are gone now. And I'm sure that there were lots of users who had Bitcoin and other crypto on those sites, and they might not even know that they didn't have it. But if they were doing it every year, you know, it's going to be a lot easier to keep track of where your stuff's at. Just bring those keys home.
Well, listen, you're obviously very close to it. It's your initiative and a great initiative. Everyone loves that. I noticed that people were changing their Twitter handles quite recently. Before we, because some of the people might not have heard the show last year or not fully understand what the initiative is. But before we do get into that, you know, you've been close to it now for a year. It's your initiative. Were there any other interesting stories that came out similar to mine where people had found money or anything else that interesting came out of it?
Well, I would like to know where Gerald Cotton's proof of keys are.
Well,
you know, like I'd like a proof of body also, you know, I mean, it's just very odd that you die in a hospital and then your wife takes your body back to the hotel. I mean, that's just weird.
Well, we should get into that. I actually interviewed, I think it was last week. I can't remember the days, like blend into themselves, but I interviewed Nathaniel Rich from Vanity Fair, who wrote the recent article about Quadriga. Have you read that piece?
No, I haven't read that one yet.
So that's a very interesting piece. He did a lot of research into it. So like for anyone listening who doesn't know, they should do, but Quadriga CX was a Canadian-based exchange. The owner of it is a very mysterious character who was on a supposed honeymoon with his wife, had quite an exorbitant lifestyle, seemed to mix with some nefarious types of people, and had also had a record of some quite crazy trading in the background. So it's quite a like convoluted, complicated story, but he was away in India, fell ill, died, nobody's seen the body, and nobody knows where the private keys are, and what was it, $250 million?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I think there were Canadian dollars involved because it was one of the largest Canadian exchange, and that's always a little confusing, like how many U.S. dollars those are. But yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. And if you do proof of keys, you know, and on a regular basis, you're just not trusting the exchanges with coins, basically, you're not at risk for this type of bad action, right? And it's better to just, you know, the best way to deal with a problem is to avoid it. You know, like why'd you get yourself in that mess? Right. I mean, we probably all thought that before, like, how did I find myself in this circumstance? And if we can just avoid the problems, I mean, that's a lot of name of the game. You know, if you're hodling your Bitcoin, you're avoiding the problems, you're not taking on all this risk, this performance risk, this counterparty risk, you know, when they're running fractional reserves and you're subject to the financial ability of them to perform. So even if they wanted to perform, they can't because they don't have the financial resources. That's different from just performance risk, where whether they're going to keep the contract, whether they're going to bring the car back when you valet it. And so, you know, this is just, I think a lot of people, they just take it for granted. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter until it's the only thing that matters. You know, and go ask all those people in line at Mt. Gox and Quadriga CX and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, it was, that was part of my reasoning for the genesis of this, because, you know, I got a lot of pushback from like Andreas and some other people about, you know, is the Bitcoin industry ready for something like this? And, you know, it could have unintended negative consequences. And I'm kind of like, what unintended negative consequences? They get to stress test their withdrawal systems. They get to polish up their policies and procedures. And if they're not playing A game basketball, like, they need to get on the bench, you know? And so I don't really see a lot of downsides to it. And maybe you're paying a couple cents in transaction fees, but, you know, you get some intrinsic reward out of that because you know that you've accomplished something and you've learned how to run your own full node and you've learned how to secure your own private keys. You know, that's all part of the human capital and the growth that we need to go through. And we need to make that investment in ourselves, in that knowledge and everything, and that those skills and those abilities. Because you can be totally right about buying Bitcoin and yet be totally wrong on how you secured it and get totally wrecked. And that's perhaps even worse than not having decided to buy Bitcoin in the first place, because you're always going to be thinking, like, what could have been, right? Like, I mean, one of my friends, he had something like $5 million worth of Bitcoin on Mt. Gox. And he never put in the work and the effort to withdraw off of it. And gosh, it was probably 2.5 years now. He got laid off from his job. Then he got in a car wreck. He's on unemployment for like 24 months or something. I mean, unemployed. I don't know if he got unemployment the whole time. But man, just, you know, and he always wonders, like, what could have been, because his Bitcoin are now like $60 million, right?
Yeah.
And he's living on his parents' couch with his hurt back that he can't, like, pay the physical therapist to help fix. I mean, like, these choices have real consequences, you know, like, for real. Mm-hmm. And especially as the Bitcoin price keeps going up, as the network effects entrench more and there's more capital that comes into the space, you know, these choices have real consequences. And so people should be aware of that. And in my opinion, like, claim your monetary sovereignty, like, it flex those muscles, you know. Don't, like, why are you picking up tear gas canisters in Hong Kong or wherever? Like, just withdraw all your money out of their system and let it implode.
So, for those who aren't aware of the campaign or the initiative or haven't kind of dug into it, maybe saw it last year and ignored it, or even new to Bitcoin, you know, I have a lot of the newbies tend to come to, or the novices tend to come to my podcast. Please explain Proof of Keys to them, what it is, why it's important, why you did it.
Yeah, so proofofkeys.com. We've got a whole bunch of, we got a countdown clock. We got a cute little honey badger because that's the Bitcoin mascot, like, running off with the keys. We even have hats. Rodolfo Novak over at Open Dime and Cold Card, he made these Proof of Keys hats with the little money badger running off with the key, you know, because, like, the honey badger just doesn't care. He's like, you know, I hear all of your sophistry, but just send me the Bitcoins right here, right now. And then you learn whether they're going to send you the Bitcoin or not, you know, because there's a whole bunch of weaseling around that can happen when it comes to the accounting statements, when it comes to how the exchanges are securing coins or any third parties, like all these lending agreements with BlockFi and Celsius and Genesis and, like, everything else. I mean, we just don't, it begins tangling things up a lot. And when things get tangled up and they're difficult to very easily discern, and a lot of these companies are private, Most of them aren't regulated in any type of way. So, I mean, they're holding billions of dollars in some cases of customer assets, and they don't have any, they're not regulated by anybody. I mean, they don't have to disclose their financial statements to anyone. I mean, that's a scary thought. And then, you know, if something blows up, you become an unsecured general creditor. Like, you don't have any priority. Like my buddy who's on his parents, couch because of his hurt back. Guess why the Bitcoins haven't been withdrawn out of Mt. Gox? It's because of this CoinLab lawsuit by Peter Vesnes.
Yeah.
Why would a potential breach of contract claim be superior to customer assets?
Well, it shouldn't be.
Well,
but it wouldn't be also as if you'd withdrawn them because
if you'd withdrawn your Bitcoins, you'd avoid the mess in the first place. But like, yeah, and think about it. Like the trustee, he has every reason to draw this thing out as long as possible. Why? Collect more fees. So he's just saying, well, there's this lawsuit here, so I guess we're just going to sit on it another 3 months, right? So mm-hmm. and in the meantime, you're not getting your Bitcoin Cash and being able to sell it. You're not getting your Bitcoin Gold and being able to sell it or whatever else. More consequences, you know, piling up. And you look at the effect of compound interest rate or compound growth, I mean, you miss out on a lot of those stuff, and the Bitcoin price starts going up, et cetera, et cetera. You're starting to miss out on a lot of money for real because you were too lazy or ignorant to figure out how to learn and secure your own private keys and actually do the work to do it. You didn't invest in yourself. And that's, you know, I mean, we spend a lot of time learning how to do a bunch of stuff in this life. You know, people go to college for 4 years or longer for graduate degrees, trying to figure out how to do something. And yet when it comes to your own money, you're not going to figure out how to hold your own private keys, run your own full node. Like, can't take a couple hours out of your day to do that. You know, my buddy that was on his parents' couch, you know, he watched lots of Netflix TV shows. Opportunity cost. You know, you're going to watch Netflix TV shows, or you're going to learn how to store your own private keys.
So with this trace, there's a couple of things there for it. It is about teaching. It's about teaching people to manage their private keys and to be sovereign. But it is also to encourage them to protect their private. So it's not just about teaching them, but it's also to encourage people. Because I imagine there's some people over the space of the year can get a bit lazy, can end up leaving some Bitcoin on some exchanges for whatever reason. So it's almost like a reminder as well. And it's also a test of the exchanges themselves. So it feels like that's like the main reasons.
Yeah, I mean, we've got those and we've got, We get the opportunity to strengthen the Bitcoin network. That's really what this is about. Why? Because the Bitcoin network is a bunch of full nodes. If you're running an SPV node, if you're on an exchange, you're in a master-slave relationship in terms of the computer architecture. When you run a full node, you're the master. And when you're the master and you're validating and verifying all those blocks that have economically substantive transactions in them because they're withdrawals from exchanges or whatever, if they send you Bitcoin Cash instead of Bitcoin, you're like, no, my node says that thing's not Bitcoin. Like, send me Bitcoin, right? Not the real Bitcoin. So, you know, that's, and then, you know, when we don't have all the keys to Bitcoin piled up in one central repository, like, you know, these third-party exchanges are, it becomes much more difficult to seize the Bitcoins. Like, for example, when Franklin Roosevelt issued Executive Order 6102 in the United States, making the holding of gold illegal, you know what he did? He sent out IRS agents to all the banks and then issued the order. And then if people came in to get gold out of their safety deposit boxes, they had to give it to the IRS agents who then gave them paper cash. So they were, because of where the gold was stored, thinking it was safe and it wasn't decentralized, you know, distributed, you know, it wasn't buried under the the special tree in the front yard or something, right? Where the dog is, they were able to seize all the gold from the Americans. And, you know, Bitcoin, if you're handling it properly, it makes it just much more difficult to seize than gold, because it doesn't have to exist in one place at one time. So I would say that's the primary purpose, is we want to help other people take their monetary sovereignty and strengthen the Bitcoin network and enhance its decentralized properties and censorship resistant properties. And that's, you know, that's really what we're trying to do. We're building in this ethos. Don't trust, verify. Like, don't trust the exchange. Just send me my Bitcoin. It's that simple.
Did you do any analysis following the initiative last year to like monitor any of the outflows from the exchanges? Were you able to monitor that? Did you see any noticeable kind of outflows?
Nothing that I would put any stock in.
Right.
Because I just don't have all of the data that I would want to have in order to, you know, make conclusions about behavior like that. I mean, there was a significant amount of traffic like that came up on YouTube views and tweets and stuff like that. I mean, how many people actually took action? Could we see that in the blockchain? I imagine we might need a couple iterations of this, you know, because each year it's going to grow stronger because people have heard about it the year before. Mm-hmm. What I do find very interesting, though, is I put the first tweet out announcing it on December 9th. And within like 24 hours, it had 100,000 views, just the video on Twitter did. And guess what Coinbase announced that Wednesday?
Tell me.
The following week, they were going to be doing some tests on their cold storage. And so everybody should not be alarmed when a very large amount of Bitcoins moves. And sure enough, the next week, they moved like 850,000 Bitcoins. The Wow. first time they'd ever made an announcement like that, you know? It's just very curious, like, because I had no idea they were going to be doing something like that. Did they have that planned in advance for a long time? Was it just an interesting coincidence, or were they trying to calm the markets by saying, no, we have the Bitcoin here for real, like we just moved them?
Well, that's their proof of reserves.
Yeah, their proof of reserves is like doing a gigantic transaction on the blockchain.
Did you say you put that tweet out on December the 9th?
Yeah, December 9th. And then that Wednesday, I think I put it out like Sunday or Monday or something. Then that Wednesday is when Coinbase made the announcement they were moving some cold storage coins. And so I was like, wow, well, you know, it's kind of like in It's a Wonderful Life. Well, your money's in Bob's house. No, we got plenty of money here until it's like all gone. Because, I mean, what if there are 3 million Bitcoins of customer deposits at Coinbase and they only have 850,000.
Well, do you want to know what else is interesting about that date as well? And another coincidence about that date. That's the date Gerald Cotton died.
No. He met with his attorney. I think he met with his attorney like the next day to do the estate plan. And then a week later is when he died.
He died on, I'm looking here in Wikipedia, December the 9th, 2018.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe. I guess I was wrong then.
Maybe he saw your tweet and pushed it forward.
Well, it sounds like he'd been planning his exit scam for a while, right?
Well, so that's an interesting one. We can get into that. I'll talk about Quadriga and the other hacks, because there were a few this last year. But I just wanted to carry on a little bit with this one. So not everybody did it, obviously, a certain amount did, and I know a few people did. And I guess what it will be is, it will tend to be like the OGs or the very conscious Bitcoiners, but every year we're going to have new Bitcoiners who, firstly, might not be on Twitter, might not see this, might not follow it. But I think I follow what you're saying. It's one of these things that you're going to do every year, and it's almost like, to get to the point where it doesn't even have to be January the 3rd. It's a constant reminder. Own your private keys. But what I wanted to ask you related to that is that a lot of people still don't do it. There's a lot of people who, you know, you say 850,000 Bitcoin or something like Coinbase. Even with you, Trace, do you see a difference between holding your Bitcoin on something like Coinbase as opposed to something like Quadriga? Or does it make no difference who the exchange is, what their practices are?
None of the exchanges are too big to fail. Like if Coinbase failed, that would probably be one of the best things that could possibly happen for the Bitcoin price. Because what would happen is you would have, how many customers do they have? Like 30 million or 20 million or something?
Yeah.
So you would have 20 million customers. Let's all say that they think they own 0.1 of a Bitcoin. Well, that's 2 million Bitcoins. And if there are 2 million paper Bitcoins and zero real Bitcoin, but the price of the real Bitcoin has been being enforced in this exchange relationship with paper Bitcoin, and then the supply of the paper Bitcoin goes poof, you know, supply and demand, your Bitcoin price is going to go up. So ironically, you know, things like Mt. Gox and Quadriga CX, it's actually a good thing for the holders of Bitcoin who have their own full nodes and private keys, because you get to destroy, you get to purge a lot of these fake paper Bitcoins out of the market. So while it's painful to the particular customers of those institutions, it's like, well, why'd you trust them? And so, you know, that's another aspect of proof of keys is, like, I totally understand if somebody doesn't want to put in the work and doesn't want to learn how to hold their own private keys like this. I totally understand that. But when you're on your parents' couch, unemployed, without any money, like, don't ask me for any, because you were lazy. Because then, you know, that would be taking capital from people who have wisely employed it and throwing it in a hole and lighting it on fire, right? Because you're giving it to somebody who has proven to be incompetent at managing the capital that they got. So, you know, there's another aspect to this that it helps build the ethos around the people who have the resources. Because if this is the largest wealth transfer ever, and the people who actually make it to the other side of this massive financial disaster, global financial disaster, if they actually make it to the other side and have the assets, you know, they made the right choices, they got the consequences, now they have all the assets, well, they're going to just have a different ethos and a different way of thinking than, you know, all these people that just want to bail everybody out of their bad choices with universal healthcare or with whatever the program of the day is from the bureaucratic establishment. So that's another thing that I think is very important is, you know, bringing financial discipline and order to people. It changes time preference. It changes cultures. It changes values. You know, Saifedean talks about this extensively in his book, The Bitcoin Standard. And, you know, we've had 100 years of easy money and government bailouts for pretty much everybody's problems. And how happy is society, right? Like, why is anxiety and depression and all this stuff like bothering people so much? It's because they get bailed out of everything and they never have to look at themselves. And so they keep lying to themselves, making bad choices, you know, then lying to themselves about the next choice they're going to make.
But we don't actually want a Coinbase or a Kraken to actually fail. We wouldn't want that. It might be good for the price, but we don't want that, do we?
Why not? They'd only fail if they were running a fractional reserve. If they're engaged in fraud, yeah, they should fail.
Yeah, but that's different.
And I don't care if they got 50 million or 100 million customers. If they're engaged in fraud and running fractional reserves and selling a bunch of paper Bitcoin, in other words, if they're selling stuff they don't have and they're lying to people and defrauding them, yeah, they should fail.
No, I mean, I don't think we would want it. It wouldn't be nice if one failed because it was hacked. For some amazing, complicated procedure, someone managed to hack the 850,000 Coinbase, some new innovative one. We wouldn't want that to happen.
Well, that's another aspect of this. Do we really want large centralized pools of Bitcoin that become massive honeypots, that become massive targets for the hackers? You know, if the hackers have to go out and hack 20 million people instead, like, it's a lot more difficult. So, you know, I don't really see that as a particularly large issue. Coinbase makes enough money that they should be able to hire competent security professionals to securely store the crypto in Bitcoins. And to date, we haven't really had like Kraken, you know, only major exchange that hasn't been hacked. And it's only natural that, you know, we might have bugs in our information systems or whatever, but that's part of Bitcoin being the sewer rat instead of bubble boy. Like, you want to grow up in this environment of survival of the fittest and zero tolerance for incompetence, you know, because the organisms or the companies that make it out of that type of an adversarial environment are just so much more fit for purpose than anything else. I mean, think about Bitcoin. It's been MIT licensed open source code. Anybody can copy it, modify it in any way. Like, it has no moats or barriers to entry around it other than its network effects. That's why it's the apex predator. You know, Fedwire system, ECB, you're dealing with a closed source, probably written on Fortran or Cobalt or something. You know what I'm saying? It's just, yeah. I mean, really, like, the only thing that's keeping it from not completely collapsing is that we just haven't built Bitcoin replacements fast enough.
Next up, I'll talk to Trace more about proof of keys, but before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So firstly, I want to welcome my new sponsor, Scott Offord, and his company Crypto Mining Tools. Scott is a Bitcoin mining consultant, and I want you to check out his Bitcoin mining profitability calculator that he made. It's available at cryptomining.tools. You just enter your estimated uptime to get more realistic profit projections. It also includes the impact of the Bitcoin block reward halving, and if you're wondering which miner is the most effective or has the best chance of breaking even, then you can try out their interactive hardware comparison chart as well. As an ASIC mining equipment broker, Scott helps you make data-backed business decisions. He can help you in finding hosting or raw power and land to get your miners up and hashing. I've known Scott for over a year now, and I've regularly discussed mining with him, and I consider him one of the foremost independent experts on the subject. If you want to find out more, you can reach Scott on Telegram or Twitter. That's Offord Scott, which is OFFORDSCOTT, or visit cryptomining.tools, which is CRYPTOMINING.TOOLS. Next up, we have Wire, and we're getting very close to the end of their sponsorship. It's ending at the end of the month, and I do want to give them the biggest boost possible as a thanks for sponsoring the show. I'm a big fan of what they're doing. So Wire are helping companies across the space offer Bitcoin onboarding. So whether you're a solo developer or a large team, if you are looking to simplify user onboarding and offer your users a fast and easy way to purchase Bitcoin, then you really need to talk to Wire. Since 2013, Wire focused on taking care of all the heavy lifting in terms of compliance, payments, and liquidity, so you can focus on building your core offering. Your idea could be the next killer app, so don't let regulators kill it. To find out more, reach out to Wire or create a developer account at sendwire.com, which is sendwyre.com. And lastly, this week, but never least, we have Dropbit, the best mobile wallet in the business. Come on, have you downloaded it yet? If not, why? Why have you not checked it out? I've been telling you all year how amazing they are, all the cool things they are doing. They recently announced the arrival of Lightning, and the UX from going between your Bitcoin and Lightning wallet is super cool. It's one of the best I've seen. But not only that, they added support for the BETCH32 addresses. It's been non-stop innovation all year with Dropbit. They started the year out with the ability to text Bitcoin to people, but they now have the ability to tweet Bitcoin to people as well. And they've added the ability to buy Bitcoin directly in the app. Seriously, if you've not checked it out now, you definitely need to check out Dropbit. It's available for the iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. Well, let's talk about claiming your monetary sovereignty, because we talked about this last year, and there's an area we're going to disagree on. And it's to do with running your full node. Do you remember me talking about this? And I said to you about my dad. There is zero chance my dad will ever run a full node. He can barely switch his computer on. Every time I go and visit him, he's got a list of things I have to fix on it. He's never going to be the guy to run a full node. Even getting my dad to the stage of actually being able to use a Trezor or a Ledger would be difficult. But I could get him to that point because I would do it for him, right? But a full node is too much. Would you be happy with people who took their Bitcoin off the exchanges but kept them on at least a hardware wallet? Is that a good enough first step?
Yeah, they're taking some incremental territory. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can think of monetary sovereignty, you could actually think about it as like you've got North America and South America. Like, North America is the scarcity, you know, the limited and the mountainous, the difficulty adjustment algorithm of Bitcoin. South America, that's more like the privacy, the anonymity, and the fungibility. And so when we're looking at taking territory on these two massive continents, you know, I think we should be very strategic about it. You know, part of the, like, he raised you and everything, you know, you kind of, you need to make sure you take care of your parents. You know, and just because, you know, if people got lied to because they had all these retirement account programs like Social Security or whatever, and they didn't have kids as a result, thinking they could free ride off other people's kids. Man, it's sad what's happening in Japan. You have people that die in their apartments and are there for 5 years before someone realizes that they're gone, right? What a lonely existence. But, you know, when we're taking this territory in the North or South America, you know, scarcity, the very heart of that's going to be holding your own private keys, doing it on a computer like a Purism, Glacier Protocol, smart custody, running a Bitcoin Core full node. Like, that's just heavily entrenching you in defensifying your position. On the privacy, anonymity, fungibility aspect of monetary sovereignty, unlike the, you know, raising the block size argument, I don't think that reasonable minds could not really differ on that point. But on the privacy, anonymity, fungibility, reasonable minds can differ on how that territory gets taken.
Because of the trade-offs.
Oh, there's tons of trade-offs. And some of them are just imposed by the technological limitations. You know, Charlie Lee recently put a post out about doing extension blocks on Litecoin to implement Mimblewimble. And Peter Wolla's, like, you know, response, and it's a great thread all about some of these trade-offs. And then we've got Lightning Network and Tor onion routing style in there. And then we've got Chami and eCash servers, and they could be an additional layer. We've got Open Dimes. You know, those things are just fantastic for fungibility. Because, like, you don't really want the transactions on the blockchain if you can help it, because it's immutable, right? And then you've got really wild moon math like Mimblewimble. So you look at, like, the Mimblewimble coins, and every block only has one one input, and, like, there's just no data there, and there are no amounts there, and it's all coin joined and confidential transactions, and you don't even see the addresses or the amounts on the blockchain. And it's much more scalable, right? Because, like, if Bitcoin were run on Mimblewimble since the beginning, they estimated it'd be something like 7 gigabytes or 16 gigabytes. And the blockchain can actually shrink with Mimblewimble. So, man, imagine being able to run a full node on your cell phone for, like, your daily cash, where you're holding your own private keys. Like, that's some serious monetary sovereignty right there, you know, on your encrypted cell phone.
But it doesn't look like we will get Mimblewimble on Bitcoin. I mean, I read Peter Wille's Reddit post. He's very doubtful about that, though he does express some kind of sympathy towards extension blocks. I think it's that whole trade-off. Some people don't realize it's kind of the main trade-off for confidential transactions is, do you want to be, like, it's very easy if you're happy to not be able to prove the 21 million. But if you want to prove the 21 million, it's very different what the options available to you.
Yeah, I mean, you have the excess values when you do the cut-throughs. And so, like, the limited and amountness, I think, is a separate issue from, like, the homomorphic encryption, you know, things like Zcash and hidden inflation, because that is one of the big trade-offs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, scarcity is more important than privacy, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think in most people's opinion.
Well, you have to build a secure layer first, and then you can build on top of the secure layer. But if we could have both scarcity and privacy, and then let's say that they're operating on the same cryptographic assumptions, you know, you've got to, like, everything else being equal, do you want the privacy? And that becomes a very personal issue, because, like, with the Bank Secrecy Act and the travel rule and FAFT and the BASPs, like, being required to follow these things, having the open, transparent blockchain can provide a very clean source for all of your Bitcoins if you're a clean actor. So there's an aspect where if there's opt-in privacy, why would people with clean coins, quote unquote, opt in with people who have dirty coins? Because the whole point is to transfer value from the clean coins to the dirty coins. And that value is expressed in the form of like the AML KYC risk of getting roped into an investigation or arrested or whatever, right? And mm-hmm. So like there's just this fundamental trade-off. And then at the technical level, and then we have all this legal kind of wrapping around it. And so there aren't really reasons, like the way I look at it, and I was talking with Adam Back about this a couple days ago, is when we have more choices, we're generally wealthier than when we have fewer choices. And so I kind of look at it like, well, why not just build tons of different types of privacy solutions, and then more people are able to use more different options, right? And that's kind of what we're seeing. We have Monero and Zcash, and Monero wants to do a side chain of Mimblewimble, and Litecoin wants to do an extension block of Mimblewimble, and I don't really like either of those ideas because of potential consensus bug issues. Like, I would rather just see Mimblewimble in the base layer, you know, and then you build on top of that, you know. So it's just a difference of value and a difference of way that, like, the debate is going, like, it's going to be a very interesting debate for the community. And we're going to need to be very civil about it and not resort to, like, dogmatism and name calling and stuff.
Good luck with that.
Well, I mean, most of the people who are still left in the Bitcoin community, like, we went through the fork wars together, you know, like, yeah, like we've got our veteran patches already. So when Charlie Lee, like, comes up with an idea about extension blocks and Mimblewimble, like, persuade me on why that's the best option, you know, and doesn't have consensus issues and stuff. Because consensus is a very difficult thing to achieve in Bitcoin, because we want extremely high consensus, you know, like 99%, hopefully, of upgrades versus like Ethereum that
50%.
I guess it hard forked over the night, and 24 minutes before the fork was supposed to happen, they only had like 50% of the nodes upgraded, yeah, or something.
What a
so
shit,
I wonder
shit.
How. Yeah, and it's probably all the nodes that were on AWS that were all run by one person. So yeah, it doesn't make me curious, like, what happened with that, but I didn't even check.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I had a debate about this the other day when we were talking about it with somebody else, and they said, you were talking about Ethereum, and they were saying, I was saying it was centralized. They're like, decentralization is a spectrum. And I was thinking about that for a second, and I was thinking, if you are becoming more centralized, I don't believe you're on a decentralized spectrum. I believe you're on a centralized spectrum. I was like, the only way you can be on a decentralized spectrum is if you're becoming more decentralized and heading positively. But if you're becoming more centralized, then I would rather say you're on a centralized spectrum, because you're becoming more centralized. And, like, I don't think anyone's discussed that before. I can't work out if I'm onto something here or I'm just being a moron.
No, I mean, we've talked about that for years in Bitcoin. You know, you've got this whole spectrum, and you're moving, you know, one end is centralized, the other end is decentralized. And it's not that Bitcoin is trustless. It's that Bitcoin distributes the trust through the incentives in such a way that it's highly decentralized, you know, because everybody's able to be running their own full nodes and stuff like that. So, and I think, you know, this centralized versus decentralized argument, it's very similar to like a privacy versus transparency or fungibility or whatever, that spectrum also. And I think it's important, like, you know, sometimes you want centralized, sometimes you don't. For example, like Liquid, which is a federated, closed source, you know, well, closed network way to transfer value between exchanges, like, it's, you want something like that to be operating in a centralized way, or a more centralized way than like the Bitcoin network in general. So you know, with this upcoming like massive privacy fungibility argument, which the way I look at it is we open the front, like this is a war for monetary sovereignty, right? And we open the front with scarcity, with Bitcoin. But do you know what the Bitcoin white paper says about this?
I'd have to go back and look.
Oh, this is hilarious. So this is Satoshi in section 10 of the Bitcoin white paper. Quote, "The traditional banking model achieves a level of privacy by limiting access to information to the parties involved and the trusted third party. The necessity to announce all transactions publicly precludes this method, but privacy can still be maintained by breaking the flow of information in another place, colon, by keeping public keys anonymous." So even Satoshi himself in the white paper acknowledged that we do have some degree of privacy with Bitcoin, but what you're going to have to do is keep your public keys anonymous. And then what happened? AML KYC and the exchanges and Chainalysis and everybody starts like mapping identities to public keys, right? And that starts to impinge on the fungibility, the privacy, the anonymity. But, you know, like we agreed on, the scarcity is more important. You know, so we open the first front in the war, taking scarcity. That was our first 10 years. You know, and Bitcoin's well on its way now. You know, 150 days, it's going to have a stock to flow ratio up near gold. 4 years later, it's going to be like scarcer than gold in terms of that stock to flow ratio. You know, now that, you know, and we've been around 10 years and we've had, people have gotten a lot of experience and we developers are learning new stuff and things are coming out like Mimblewimble. So like, I think now we have enough money in the industry. We have enough skilled, talented developers and everything. Let's open an entirely new theater. You know, like scarcity is Europe. Let's open the Pacific theater on privacy and open a new front in this monetary sovereignty war and start taking more territory in terms of monetary sovereignty in the privacy, anonymity, fungibility areas. Because right now it's really small. Monero is like 1.1 billion. Grin and Beam are like 30 million a piece. Zcash is a couple hundred million, but it's opt-in and centralized trusted setup. You know, because if we're going to be, you know, if we're really serious about taking monetary sovereignty, let's build as many tools as we can and fight the war. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we now have the resources to open up a new front in the war for monetary sovereignty. And I totally agree with Peter Wolla that Mimblewimble is not going to get activated into Bitcoin. I mean, there's nothing even on the proposal schedule for that. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So that means that you're either going to have to look at layer two solutions and above, like Lightning Network, or you're going to have to look outside Bitcoin. And, you know, that's, you got a knife, a fork, and a spoon, and you want to use them all together, right? And so in a way, like if we only have the fork, if we only have Bitcoin, like getting the knife would actually be a complementary good with Bitcoin, and then we could accomplish more things with it. So like we need to build the best other privacy tools that we can if we're serious about taking monetary sovereignty.
Okay, so going back to proof of keys, because this is what we're talking about, I do have like one final question for you. I think the answer is going to be quite interesting before we kind of wrap up, is that I noted it down earlier on. You said about claiming your private keys and you mentioned lending services like BlockFi and Celsius. And to use a service like that, you have to hold your private keys with them. So, you know, if I use BlockFi, I've got some Bitcoin of mine, they custody it with Gemini, which is insured. Okay. To follow proof of keys, I have to take that out of BlockFi, which means I then essentially cancel my interest to prove that it's there, to then potentially put it back again because I want to use the service, because I like the service. I'm happy to risk a certain amount of Bitcoin for my interest. Where does this fit into proof of keys for you? Because it's slightly different than taking from an exchange.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of wrestling with that right now. I got an email from a friend of mine who runs a fund, and he needs about $10 million worth of Bitcoin from December 27th to January 3rd, because he needs to, basically the auditor wants all of the Bitcoin off the balance sheet as of the date of the audit. And so they're gonna get all the Bitcoin off of their balance sheet, have the audit, and then all the Bitcoin comes back on like January 3rd. And they're gonna pay a pretty decent amount of interest to borrow Bitcoin for like that week, right? But I don't know. I don't know if I want to pick up those pennies in front of the steamroller just over neither borrower nor lender be, right? If you don't lend or borrow, then you're pretty much immune to the debt-based vicissitudes of counterparty risk and all that type of stuff. So, I mean, that's definitely for each individual to figure out like where their tolerance is. I bet the amount of money that you earn in BlockFi in a day is probably, not going to make that big a difference in the grand scheme of things. And, the other aspect is, like, have you ever been able to make withdrawals out of BlockFi? Do they have particular types of limits on how much you can withdraw? Do you have limits on how long you have to have the Bitcoin locked up? They're like a CD. So there are a lot of different considerations.
Yeah, so this is where it's different, because this isn't about claiming your monetary sovereignty so much. This is more of a test of the institution itself, testing their processes, procedures, reserves. Because if you're only going to go and put it back straight after because you want the interest, then it is only a test. Whereas something like with the exchange, it's more about claiming your monetary sovereignty. It's owning your private keys. It's more of a long-term kind of discipline for how you manage your Bitcoin. But this one is more of a test of the institution.
Well, it's, if you're the sovereign, it's kind of nice. Like, make the court jester dance once in a while. It's good entertainment value.
Yeah, but it is different.
But when you're the sovereign, you're the one making the choice. You can make the choice of whether or not to ask for the withdrawal. You don't have control over them making the choice of whether or not to send it to you. Mm-hmm. Right? So, if that's how someone wants to exercise their monetary sovereignty, all the power to you. I mean, it's supposedly your Bitcoin. You can do what you want with it.
Yeah. But it is different.
But don't lie to yourself that they would have sent you your Bitcoin, because you don't know.
No, I know that. Yeah, it's just a different, when we talked about the different reasons to do it, like I say, with an exchange, it is about creating your own discipline of owning your private keys. But this is more of a service. This is a financial service that's built on top of it. So I don't know. I just see it slightly different.
Yeah, I mean, another, if people are selling options, like on Ledger X or whatever, if you've sold March Bitcoin options and it has to be position locked, I mean, are you really going to like exit the trade in order to withdraw the Bitcoin? I mean, probably not. I mean, everybody's got to like manage their monetary sovereignty how they see fit. And, it's like things can happen though. If you never ask, then you don't know what the answer really is. So, that's what I'd kind of leave with that. And proof of keys isn't just like, it's more of an ethos. And so you want to be doing this, have these types of thinking practices like throughout the year, just being on guard on where your keys are at and what people are doing with them.
Okay, so before we close out, have you got any final messages for anyone? Anything you want to say before we close out? And also definitely tell them where they find out more and what they need to do.
Oh, yeah. So proofofkeys.com. helps you learn all that stuff. My podcast is Bitcoin Knowledge at bitcoin.kn, and then on Twitter at Trace Mayer. And yeah, just a happy December for everybody. Let's start the new year off right, you know, knowing what we own, having possession of it, running our own full node, strengthening the Bitcoin network, helping everybody else that's in the space. Because, you know, it's not just about us, like proving the keys. We're also helping strengthen the Bitcoin network by running a full node. And so it's a, you know, if that's the only thing you want to do, like at least do that, you know, more full nodes, the better. So yeah, the way I kind of see it, the more full nodes and the more hodlers of last resort, those are the two big categories that we want to be increasing. And then also just on the new front, the new privacy war front that we're opening, strap on your seatbelts. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, God. All right. Well, listen, look, Trace, it's always a pleasure to have you on. You know, I do have to thank you again. Like I say, you know, I got another half of Bitcoin because of you, man, that I would have lost. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's the way to create some loyalty to an initiative like this is to, I hope I find another Bitcoin this year or a few Bitcoin, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I'll be doing the same. I'll be promoting it. I'll be telling everyone the same. And yeah, appreciate everything you do, man. And hopefully I will see you soon for a good steak.
Well, thanks so much. And you have a great day.
Okay. So what did you guys think of that? Do you enjoy that? It's great to have Trace on. Love having him on. Always hypes me up with Bitcoin. So most people have heard the mantras and the sound bites, not your keys, not your Bitcoin, but initiatives like Proof of Keys are a great reminder and push to encourage people to take control of their private keys. People who might not have done this before, whether it's laziness or ignorance, might have just left things on exchanges. So this is a great yearly reminder to do this. So I hope you enjoyed this one. If you do want to find out a bit more about this, then you can check out proofofkeys.com. If you want to hear more from Trace on monetary sovereignty, then my show from October is well worth a listen. That was episode 153. And thanks for listening. As ever, if you've got any questions, you can hit me up. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And again, I do want to say thanks to everyone who supports the show. From those who leave me a review on iTunes or those who sponsor the podcast, whatever you do, it really helps. If you do want to support the show, you can find out more on my website. It's whatbitcoindid.com, and there's a support section. Just click on that.